Welcome to NucleCast, the official podcast of the NY Deterrence Center. Our host is Dr. Adam Laufer, co-founder and vice president for research at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. The NY Deterrence Center is a 501c3 organization ensuring a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrence and its ongoing modernization. Thank you for listening and welcome to the show. The views of the host and the guests are their own.
Well, hello, and welcome to another edition of NucleCast. I'm Jim Howe, filling in for the indisputable champion of podcasts, Dr. Adam Lowther. We have a terrific guest today, Lucian Niemeyer, who has got one heck of a resume. He's right now a leading voice in the policymaking community when it comes to bringing advanced nuclear capabilities to America. He's got a military background in the Air Force and the Air National Guard. He has worked on the Hill, on the Senate Armed Services Committee, as a professional staff member. He's worked as an assistant secretary of defense. He's worked at OMB. He's pretty much worked everywhere that's important. So, Lucian, it's great to have you. You're a founding member of UCAN Power. Full disclosure, I do work with UCAN as well. And you've been really busy lately. Tell us about what UCAN's been up to.
Yeah, first of all, Jim, I really appreciate you having me on the show again. It's been a couple of years since I had a chance to work with the team here, and there's a lot that's been going on since then. And so I'm really happy to be able to catch you up on everything. So UCAN Power, United Coalition for Advanced Nuclear Power, it started right here as an idea. And we were talking a couple of years ago that we need to have another voice, kind of a grassroots organization that would complement the efforts of other associations in the nuclear energy space, but really focused on advanced nuclear reactor deployment. And so that's what we did. And, you know, Jim, you've been a big part of this as well. We've been going at it now for 2.5 years. We just happened to catch a tailwind as the nation is embracing nuclear once again. As you know, we've had some downtimes over the last couple of decades. But I think as we look at a range of goals for our country, whether it be grid reliability or carbon reductions, nuclear power seems to fit perfectly for that combination of clean, reliable, resilient power. So we saw this a few years ago and felt like, hey, this a nonprofit organization, kind of galvanizing grassroots support, interacting with interagencies, bringing some of the agencies together, focusing on the efforts of the Department of Defense, we'll get to in a minute, was needed. And it sure has been an incredible ride. As you know, we've done some writing. We have a lot of expertise within our nonprofit, among our staff and advisors, and we've been able to write some pretty significant documents that we hope eventually will be adopted. A proposed national strategy for advanced nuclear reactor technology, potentially an executive order, things that were easy for us to write because we do have that background and experience. But it's other than just a white paper, it's something that's actionable. And so that's really what this organization, UCAN Power, is all about, is finding real actions. Yes, we also do put on conferences. As you know, Jim, and you and I, we just completed a national a nuclear energy security conference in June with an incredible lineup of speakers. Can't wait to do that again. Really felt like that was value added, bringing some folks together, whether it be the Nuclear Regulatory Commission chairman or representatives from the Department of Defense and from the labs. So that was fantastic. So we're going to continue our work. It's amazing that we're seeing the nation embrace nuclear power. Everyone from the Department of Energy, even up to the president, and then across all industries. So we feel like we can continue to do our part to raise awareness, to promote quick deployment, spanning the bridge mainly from federal deployments, particularly in Department of Defense, eventually to commercial deployments. So it's an exciting time. We just happen to pick the perfect time to establish a nonprofit. So we've had a lot of work, and there's still a lot of work to do.
Fantastic. And so let's talk a little bit about the nuclear triad. I mean, it's been really the backbone of America's defense posture since, you know, the 1950s. You know, originally it was not a triad. It was just bombers. And then in the late 50s, we brought on the ICBMs and the missile submarines. We even tried at one point to have a nuclear powered aircraft that could go up and loiter for months on end, ready to respond. That program was canceled by President Kennedy. But right now, today, we're doing a pretty major modernization of the triad. How can nuclear power, not nuclear weapons, how can nuclear power support the nuclear triad?
Okay, so I'm going to set aside the air part of the triad because I'm not sure we'll ever get to a nuclear airplane. But as you know, the Columbia class submarine program is well underway. Those are our what we call our boomers, which are the submarines that carry nuclear weapons, and that program relies on nuclear power. The Columbia class for years, and before that, the Ohio class has been nuclear powered submarines using microreactors. So for anybody in this country who says we don't build microreactors, well, we've been building them for decades. We just happens to be for aircraft carriers and submarines. So we're already powering one leg of the triad with nuclear power. My concern is why we're not powering the third leg. We're in the process right now of a program called Sentinel, where we are recapitalizing all the land-based missile silos, where we're modernizing them. And they're predominantly in the Western United States. Right now, they're running on commercial power. You and I have both spent a lot of time thinking, okay, if we do get into a conflict with China, you know, what will happen to our commercial power grid? I'm kind of shocked that the Department of Defense, particularly the Air Force, is not looking at nuclear power to actually run those silos. I think there's maybe a renewed emphasis to see within that $100 billion program, where should we be relying on more resilient energy sources and to be able to provide mission assurance for that mission. So, UCAM Power, that's one of our priorities. One of our goals is to suggest and to work with the Air Force to determine that, yeah, as we're looking at particularly backup power sources, but even, you know, isolated primary power sources, we should be looking at nuclear reactors at our missile fields. We have the expertise there. I mean, those we have the nuclear capability in the silo. There's no reason why we can't take that expertise and actually run those facilities off of nuclear power as well.
So basically, the concept would be you'd have a small modular reactor or micro reactor that would be feeding, you know, the electricity that you need to keep our deterrent on standby.
Yeah, and it's consistent with what the Air Force just put out. The Air Force put out an RFI looking for nuclear power opportunities for energy resilience. So we're saying, yeah, why even rely on commercial power? You know, when I became the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Energy Programs, I had a very direct request from then Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis, that is, start putting nuclear reactors on our military installations. And the reason then, and he made it very clear, is he did not believe that the homeland was a sanctuary, and that we will be subjected to potential attacks to our grid by an adversary wanting to deter us from taking action. So he felt the quicker we could isolate some of our mission critical systems, the less likely that an adversary was going to look at that as an attractive target, because it doesn't reduce our military or our national security capability. And therefore, by not attacking the grid, we also save lives and protect our society. So we do have a strong program. DoD is continuing that program. What can be done to take critical mission facilities off the commercial grid, make them more resilient, and therefore making that grid less likely of a target by adversaries?
Got it. Now, you've also spoken very passionately about the workforce side of things, the importance of workforce development, and really the tie between the defense industry and defense needs and the civilian nuclear workforce. Can you talk more about that? You know, why that's important, you know, how it kind of all works together, and why it's important to have a strong civilian nuclear workforce for national defense?
Well, it really goes to a bigger issue here, which is how do we restore the nuclear industrial base? It's kind of been not in a good place in the last couple of decades. As you know, we gave up our ability to refine and mine and refine fuel. We are not building significantly new reactors. I mean, there was a real downtime there. And my concern actually goes to a national security concern. If you don't have a good, robust commercial industry, it's tough to convince a young person, 18 or 19 years old, to go into the Navy as a nuclear engineer or go into or become a nuclear engineer because they don't necessarily see a career path after their service to our country. So if we want to maintain a strong military workforce, and predominantly in the Navy, but in other areas as well, we have to ensure that we have a strong industry afterwards that will reward their service to our country with continued opportunities afterwards. So that is just one aspect of a need to restore a comprehensive set of skills that are unique to nuclear construction, nuclear operation. Right now you have an initiative underway by the Department of Navy called buildsubmarines.com, which I'm a part of. The Navy is spending hundreds of millions of dollars specifically to attract workers to a nuclear workforce, to a submarine workforce. As you know, all submarines these days, the United States, are powered by nuclear reactors. So we do need a young folks to look at this career and say, you know what, this can be a 40 or 50 year career if I invest the time now to become a nuclear engineer or a nuclear technician. As you know, there are specific skill sets even among technicians, whether it be welding or pipe fitting or metallurgy, that doesn't necessarily require a college degree, but still needs to be certified to be able to conduct activities that are needed for nuclear construction. We need those workers as well. So when you look at not just the Department of Defense, but the civilian industry, as we're seeing an explosion of growth of developers working on small and micro reactors, it's consistent for us to want to promote a workforce across the board that ultimately restores that robustness to our domestic capability to develop, to manufacture, and ultimately to export reactors around the world. We have a huge issue that we highlighted in our conference that the Russians and Chinese are using their energy policy, particularly their advancements in the development of nuclear technology, as a coercive energy policy for countries that once you install a reactor, then you need to keep that country's experts in country long term to be able to run it. So we're seeing our adversaries take a much more aggressive posture on developing a nuclear workforce. And it's time for us to say, you know what, we were the originators of this. We were the innovators. We need to restore that. And that starts with giving a young person or a person that's transitioning an opportunity to really make a great living and support our country. So, yes, I'm and UK Empower, we're involved in it. I'm also involved in an initiative to inspire young women and minorities to get into nuclear engineering. Can't wait to roll that out with you, Jim, in the next few months of interviews and podcasts and interactions with prominent women in the nuclear industry who have been leading the way, who have been groundbreakers and trendsetters. And we need more of that. We need a young person to say, you know what, this is a outstanding technology, fusion and fission, not just one or the other. So we're saying, hey, you can either join the club to help us split atoms or bring them together. Either way, it's going to be very beneficial for humanity and for our future.
Yeah, and I got to point out that these are good paying jobs. I mean, even if you're just wearing a coveralls to work every day and turning a wrench, you're nuclear certified and you're going to make a good living for you and your family. So that's
good. Absolutely.
So looking over at DOD, I think a lot of this is based on the work you did when you were Assistant Secretary of Defense, is they're now looking at micro reactors for a couple of different fixed site applications, as well as for potential mobile applications. Can you just give us a quick overview of where we're at with those?
Yeah, sure thing. So, I sat down with the Secretary of Defense back in 2017, so I'll stay right up front. I wasn't as successful as I would have liked to have been. It's taken too long. But yes, all three services now are either have or are about to put out an RFI. The Air Force was the first one out of the chute with a pilot program demonstration project at Eielson Air Force Base in Alaska. Incredibly strategic location. I'm fully supportive of that being the first location. We definitely need reliable power up there in the Fairbanks area. And I know the Air Force has had a couple of hiccups with protests, but I still feel that that's a viable initiative that's moving forward. But that's just a start. The Air Force made it very clear to us when they talked at our conference that they want to do more. They want to look at another opportunities. Like I said, there was just a request information that came out asking for feedback from industry on about a consortium of companies that would promote a range of technologies to include nuclear power. So I think the Air Force is stepping out. The Army lit up the world recently with their collaboration with the Defense Innovation Unit. They put out an RFI early this year. Hopefully we'll be sharing with the NUCAM Power some of the results of that with the Defense Innovation Unit coming up here in October. But that I believe that the Army received over 40 responses of viable technologies that could ultimately power Army installations. And the Navy, to me, has a natural a synergy, for lack of a better word, based on the work they do already with nuclear reactors. So the Navy is getting ready to put out a request for information in October for installation support. So we're talking major military bases that have a significant power load on potentially putting a reactor on that installation. I say installations because there's also another program within the Department of Defense a lot of people get confused about, and that's Project Pele. And Pele has been going on for about 4 years through the Special Capabilities Office. Jeff Waxman and his team have done an amazing job of pushing a demonstration reactor. The intent there is to, a little bit of an engineering difference, is to be able to deploy and temporarily set up a reactor to meet emergencies or contingencies where generation is threatened. And so that program is proceeding very well. I believe they're actually going to be sending a prototype to the Idaho National Lab next year. And their goal is to get it ready to deploy within the next 3 years. That's incredibly important because my life as a military logistician, I understand that the first thing that's going to happen and when any kind of contingency is if an adversary wants to strike at the heart of our U.S. military capability, they're going to take out our fuel and deny us the ability to power our technologies on the battlefield. So I am passionate about what we can do to, in a contested logistics environment, to maintain electricity for our critical systems. And for me, Project Pele is an absolute essential part of that, being able to deploy a reactor and set it up and start powering, electricity powering local systems. So we really do have an urgency to address that tether of fuel, which has ultimately been painful for us, been costly for us over the last decades. And to me, nuclear reactor technology can solve a lot of those problems.
So this whole concept of basically having a reactor on a military installation, similar to what we were talking about with the Sentinel program, is you're not having to rely on the grid. You're kind of independent. You're resilient. You've got that resiliency that's really needed because we know we're in such an interconnected world now that people can hack into all sorts of systems and do all sorts of mischief, and we can't be subject to that.
And not only that, it's reliability. I mean, look, you've been seeing the headlines, Jim, like I have, that we're taxing our grid, particularly with the advent of artificial intelligence and data mining, crypto mining. We are at the point now where our supply may not be enough to meet the demand. And for the grids, and we have multiple grids in this country, that potentially could mean more brownouts and blackouts. And so it's the reliability, not just the resilience, but the reliability that the Department of Defense needs more than anything else. So when you put a nuclear reactor on a military installation, a small one, we're not talking huge, and you can run that reactor for 10 years, that's assured reliable power. There is not going to be a cyber attack that can stop that. There's not going to be a attack to the grid that can stop that. It's going to be in a microgrid, self-contained, and you're going to have assured power. You're seeing a lot of entities around the country, even on the commercial side, who want that exact same thing. A lot of data centers and the developers of those, whether it be Amazon Web Services, Microsoft, Google, All these entities are looking for reliable power sources. In some cases, they're cutting deals directly with the owners of nuclear reactors to say that first electron coming out of that reactor, we're talking about legacy reactors, is going to go to power my data center. So you're seeing increasing demand on the grid. I mean, you're seeing a concern about us not being able to build enough generation nationwide, particularly when it takes 5 to 7 to 10 years to get a transmission power line approved or and permitted. A lot of folks are looking for behind the meter. So is the Department of Defense. And behind the meter to me is the future. You can put a small reactor, when they say behind the meter, on a site co-located on a military base or a data center and power that operation without having to rely on transmission and distribution lines.
Well, with that, we'll explore that a little bit more in just a second. We're going to take a break and then return with this great conversation about advanced nuclear with Lucian Niemeyer. Thank you very much.
This episode of NucleCast is brought to you by the Ann Law Deterrence Center, whose mission is to educate Americans about the nuclear enterprise and strategic deterrence.
Okay, we're back at NucleCast with Lucian Niemeyer. It's great to have you. Great conversation so far. So we're talking about data centers. We're talking about this huge increase in the amount of electricity is going to be needed, especially with AI. I guess AI, a data center with AI servers takes 5 to 10 times more electricity than a data center without AI servers. AI is the future. So we're going to need a lot of juice. But at the same time, you have a defense aspect to that as well. I mean, a lot of our defense systems, you know, use data centers. So how does this all kind of come together? You know, what are our concerns about the grid reliability, about, like you talked about, the behind the meter? You know, what are your thoughts on using, you know, national security data centers? You know, how do you protect them from making sure that they're got reliable juice coming to them and no problems there?
Yeah, so the biggest thing that I have right now, and I'll just lay it out there, Jim, you know, I'm pretty opinionated, is that I think as a country, we need to ask ourselves, what's more important to us, resilience, reliability, or renewables? Three R's. As you know, we've had a push in this country to try to use green power sources as a way to reduce carbon. But I'm concerned that's increasing volatility on the grid. And ultimately, who's going to suffer are folks who are reliant on electricity for their survival. My worst nightmare is that we're going to end up killing people before we can decarbonize them. And that is, that when you start seeing that reliability be affected and the grid going down, that is not good for our country. And that affects society, not just our national security functions or our economy. That affects society. So I do believe we need to emphasize as a country, the number one priority for our country is reliability. And that means promoting technologies that can get us to that 99.99% reliability. And for me, that's nuclear power. Geothermal, some other sources that don't have that intermittency. I don't believe as a nation we have battery storage at scale right now that can compensate for intermittent power sources. So we do have to look at what do we need to do to ensure grid reliability, particularly as you see technology enhancing or increasing demand. You don't necessarily need to point to just data centers. I mean, look at your home. We have more technologies plugged in than we did 10 years ago, 20 years ago. We're now plugging in our cars, and we're going to be plugging in a lot more and drawing a lot more electricity from every segment of our society. So everybody keeps pointing to artificial intelligence. Yep, no, that's a big draw. But you also see other parts of our economy. Anybody who's gotten involved with crypto, I'm not, but there are a lot of folks who believe in it. That's all. In order to do those operations, that requires electricity. So we're starting to see across society aspects of our virtual economy draw more electricity. And we're going to become more reliant on that. And when you do that, you've got to have reliable energy and not just resilient or green. So that's kind of what I'm seeing is that, you know, and I'll be speaking about this, over the next few months at conferences around the country, is we have to focus like a laser on what is needed investment wise to ensure that every American, every citizen does not have to worry about a brownout or a blackout, whatever that takes, you know, whether it takes opening up coal plants, whether it takes, more natural gas plants or more nuclear. We need to focus on ensuring that everybody has access, whether you're in the countryside, in the rural areas, or in cities, you have access to reliable power. And unfortunately, we're not there, and it's getting worse. So, and that's something that I think as a nation, we need to focus on.
I couldn't agree more. But we do have this thing called politics, and we have a presidential election coming up, but you might have heard of it. And we're going to have a new administration, regardless of who wins, coming into power here in January of next year. What should that administration's energy priorities be for the next 4 years?
So, let's talk about now. So the Biden administration, I think, has promoted nuclear power. I believe that they've had some great folks over at the Department of Energy that are really taking this seriously and want to ensure that nuclear power is a part of our future. And they've also started to look at grid reliability. They've been some recent announcements about investments nationwide of billions of dollars in grid reliability. So I'm really hoping that whoever is president in the next 4 years will take those efforts and multiply them. I personally believe that we should take a look at the Inflation Reduction Act and where we put money and realign that to reliability issues. There are criticisms about that particular bill that it was really promoting just green energy, and that may be warranted. So I think we do need to take a look at, okay, let's see where some of those dollars, that spending bill, can go towards what I believe Americans care more about, which is keeping the lights on. And I think that's a higher priority for us. So I think whoever is the next president is going to want to take a look at, okay, are we spending and are we working with utilities? Are we spending the federal money? And I'm not sure if federal money is the answer. It just needs to be, are we prioritizing with our utilities and with the shareholders and the investors in those utilities? Because that's ultimately a lot where the priorities come from. Are we emphasizing grid reliability and the investments needed? And I'm talking like the blocking and tackling, Jim. I'm talking like clearing trees away from power lines, replacing poles, upgrading transformers, ensuring that we don't have, during a windstorm, a power line come down and start a wildfire. And that's the kind of stuff that I think Americans care about, is that we have infrastructure that's safe and reliable and resilient. And so I really do believe whoever the next president is going to want to focus on that. Now, you and I have been working pretty hard on suggestions to whoever the next president is for an executive order for advanced nuclear power. So we're going to continue to push that. I think we do need a national program, not quite the Manhattan Project, but close, that restores the vitality of our entire nuclear industry to include our supply chain. As you know, you and I have done some work with the national labs. We need to recapitalize some of our capability in our national labs to be able to address various aspects of the nuclear supply chain, whether it be development of new fuels, whether it be nuclear weapons modernization. There are billions of dollars of investment required across our national lab infrastructure that is needed to restore and revitalize and modernize our nuclear industry. So, if I were advising the president, those are the things that I would be prioritizing. Where do we need to spend our scarce taxpayer dollars? We are running a $33 trillion deficit right now. I'm sorry, debt. We're still running over $1 trillion deficit. So we need to obviously not spend too much money. We need to be prudent about it. But we need to prioritize what I believe should be the most important things, which is grid resilience and restoring U.S. global leadership when it comes to nuclear power.
Great. And that kind of brings us to, the penultimate question here. You know, Adam likes to close the show usually by saying, hey, if you had three wishes, what would they be? I'll put it in more generic terms. But, what are really the three most important things you see for, bringing advanced nuclear technology to the nation?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I three wishes. My gosh, doesn't everybody wish they had three wishes? And I guess my first wish would be to get three more wishes, so I have six wishes or five wishes. But I'll kind of answer that question as best I can. So I think the first wish I have is that we need to accelerate the regulatory process. I realize the NRC, National Nuclear Regulatory Commission, has a very good track record of safe licensing of nuclear technology. I don't want in any way to affect that or to impact that, but it takes forever to get a nuclear license, and it's impeding our ability to move technology to market. So I know Congress is working hard to try to come up with a way to accelerate or ask the NRC to accelerate or an expedite review of modern technology. I think that has to be my number one wish. Is work with the NRC to acknowledge that modern technology is not as threatening as 60-year-old technology, and that we've solved a lot of problems, and to acknowledge that and to come up with an expedited way to take a reactor and efficiently, because a lot of times it costs like $1 billion to get a license, efficiently and affordability, to license that reactor for commercial use. And so I think we need to, that would be a number one wish, is how can we quickly have the NRC adopt an expedited licensing process. My second wish is we need to get reactors up and operating quickly. I think the Department of Defense may be the first mover on this, but the sooner that we can, first of all, restore legacy reactors. As you know, we're on a path right now that I don't believe is sustainable of retiring large legacy reactors. We need to stop that. And I think this administration's already done that with Diablo, and you know, we'll see where else around the country. But I think that we need to look at, okay, nuclear power is a clean power source for the current administration, is a reliable power source. We need to maintain these reactors, and we need to put additional ones in operation. It took forever to get Vogtle up and operating, but it is up and operating. And it's doing it. And now you'll see that affordable power, those prices start coming down in Southeast United States. We need to get more reactors up and operating and under construction. So that's my second wish. And my third wish is that I hope within the next 4 years, we have done enough in the fuels part of it, in the supply chain, that we have restored our global leadership for countries wanting to have nuclear power. So we're talking Romania, Poland, you know, some of the countries we're working with right now, who want to work with us and our allies, and the French and are doing a great job too, but want to use Western developed Western technology and not necessarily keep buying reactors from the Chinese or the Russians that may have a coercive or a negative impact once those reactors are in operation. So. Restoring U.S. global leadership for the development of peaceful nuclear technologies, and not just for Earth, but you and I were on a panel recently, Jim, and it's for space too. We do have amazing opportunities in space for space propulsion, space power, and also lunar and Martian power. So when I say global leadership, also in those areas, NASA is doing some great work, DARPA is doing some great work. But we need to ensure that we have a strong nuclear industry for what we would like to do as a global leader in space as well. So those are the three: licensing, get one up and operating, and then restore U.S. leadership.
Yeah, and that's a great list. I got to tell you, you know, my personal favorite being the whole space piece of it. But if we're really going to ever really inhabit Mars or explore further out into the solar system, nuclear propulsion is the way to go. It really makes a lot of sense. And quite frankly, we were developing this all the way back in the 1960s. The most powerful reactor ever built was demonstrated in 1968, over 4,000 megawatts of thermal energy coming out of that thing. And that was for space travel. It was never operationalized, unfortunately. But with that, I got to say, we are out of time. This has been a fascinating conversation. And Lucian, can't thank you enough for being here on NucleCast. With that, we will close down the show. But unless you have any final words you want to share with us.
Yeah, for everybody who's been able to listen in, I really do appreciate it. If you do want to find out more information about our nonprofit, it's the United Coalition for Advanced Nuclear Power. We call it UCAN Power, and it's there. And we have a website. So if you're interested in finding out more, or you want to be a part of us, we're all volunteers. We believe passionately in the future of nuclear technology. So if you would like to be a part of our nonprofit, please reach out. And then you can also find me and Jim on LinkedIn and as well, if you want to reach out that way.
Well, thanks very much for a great episode of NucleCast. And with that, we'll sign off. And thank you again for all your great work on behalf of the nuclear industry and for the nation. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, it's a passion, as you know.
Yep. Thank you.
This has been a production of the ANWA Deterrence Center, a 501c3 that seeks to educate key decision makers, stakeholders, and the public to ensure a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent. Our executive producer is Kimberly Charrington, and this episode has been engineered and mixed by David Grunthal. Help us grow our followers by sharing it and follow the show on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at NucleCast.